We have this week been focusing on John Fitzgerald Kennedy, his presidency, his legacy and his words, with the assistance of various people who have been speaking at the Parnell Summer School in Avondale. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, is the most famous quote attributed to John F. Kennedy, demanding a sense of civic activism and responsibility of his people. To examine that idea, or ideal perhaps, I'm joined by three gentlemen who are on their way to the Parnell Summer School for a discussion this afternoon. The Fine Gael TD Simon Harris, Michael McDougall, former Taoiseach and leader of the Progressive Democrats, and Stephen Collins, political correspondent with the Irish Times. You're very, very welcome this morning. Stephen, to you first of all, you are a very experienced observer of political life, one of the most experienced of the dealings between politicians and constituents. It may be thought to be a noble thing to serve your country, but is the bulk of the work done by a TD in this country to do with lobbying, and then some more lobbying?
Well, a lot of the work of a TD is to do with lobbying. It's making representations, they would call it, representations for individuals or for groups, usually for voluntary groups, but sometimes for business, for local interest groups. I think that takes up a lot of the time. Your two TDs, your current TD and former TD, might be able to elaborate on how much time they spend on that. But I think TDs I've spoken to have said to me that they spend, in their opinion, too much time doing that, but also too uncritically, that what they do is they simply make representations. And almost all representations they make involve the state spending more money. They don't query it. They simply go in and make the case to a minister, make a case publicly that the state should be doing X, Y or Z. And I think we even saw that during the boom years. Everybody now criticises Fianna Fáil for the way the money was spent. Very few people, in fact, almost nobody in the political system was saying, hang on, you're spending too much. The criticism of the government during the Bertie Ahern years was that the government wasn't spending enough. So there isn't anything in our system, I think, where politicians have a structure where they can say, hang on, if we're asking for more spending, where is that money going to come from? There's no pressure, for instance, on the taxation. And the assumption is taxes will be collected, money will be borrowed, and virtually every demand can be met. So I think that is one of the flaws in our current system, that our TDs are so accessible both to the public as individuals and to the public as interest groups.
Okay, we'll talk about clientelism in more detail a little bit later. But Simon Harris, has that been your experience as a politician serving for the last 2.5 years since you entered Dáil Éireann, that you are on one level lobby fodder and on the other level lobbying?
Yes, to a degree. I think it's both a strength and a weakness. And I also think the electorate need to make up their own minds as well, because at the end of the day, my electorate are my boss. The people of Wicklow are in charge of me. They send me to the Dáil to represent me. Yes, I'm meant to show leadership, but I'm also there to represent them. The amount of people whose doorbells I rang during the general election campaign of 2011 who wanted to talk about national issues and even made references on the doorstep, actually, to, you know, well, yeah, you're a councillor now, but go up there and be a national politician if you become a TD. And then those same people might be the people, as soon as you get into the Dáil, who send you an email about the need for a dog litter being on a beach.
So they did want to talk about national issues.
Yeah, and that's where the electorate need to make up their mind, and we need to have a broader discussion about what the electorate expect their politicians to be. However, just to counterbalance, I think, there is a strength in our system as well. The accessibility of Irish politicians to their electorate can be a strength. For example, it's quite difficult to live in a bubble as an Irish politician, because you're constantly meeting people, you're constantly being prodded and probed by your constituents. So you do have an idea of what the people are actually feeling on any given day. And take, for example, if a woman contacts me, or a father contacts me, and says they can't access domiciliary care allowance for their child with autism. Okay, if one person contacts me about that and I make a representation, that's clientelism. But if 10 people, as has happened, contact me, all of a sudden I know, hang on a second, there must be a problem with the system. So it's what I do with the information. It's like what Stephen says, do I critically take that information and not just make the quick representation or write the letter to the minister, but actually say, hang on, minister, we have a problem here, the system isn't working, and what we need to do to change it is A, B and C. So there's an onus on the electorate to decide what they want from their politicians. And there's also an onus on their national politicians to harness the information you pick up from doing your rounds, if you like, and critically evaluate it and see how you can create better systems at a national level. And I think it's that balance that we need to try and get.
Michael McDougall, you served as TD, Minister for Justice, Attorney General. You were well compensated for those roles. Some would argue that you would have been better compensated had you been elsewhere. But was there a value to it personally that was beyond the monetary value?
Well, there certainly is. I mean, the impetus to get into politics, I don't want to sanctify it by calling it a vocation, but I mean, willingness to get into politics is a mixture of motives. First of all, there's personal ambition of a sort. You'd be a strange politician if you had absolutely no personal ambition. But secondly, there is a desire to improve society, to serve the country. And one of the things that I'm very strong about is the, and I'm not saying this critically at all of Stephen, but I mean, there are quarters of the media who just denigrate everybody who stands for politics, stands for election. And I can tell you, I mean, from my own experience, it's a fairly hard decision to make. You know, you have to balance up your family, your career, everything else. You have to throw yourself into a system which is fairly unforgiving if you make mistakes, and which in general terms, a lot of public discourse says you're in it for yourself, you're in it to do us down, you're in it to make yourself rich, which was not the case in the vast majority of TDs that I've ever seen, and which tears down the political process and denigrates it. And I think one of the problems, Miles, and it's something which I put forward cautiously, is that we have got to the point where the media feel that they are the main method of accountability, that they hold the political class to account. And there's of course, that's one of the functions of media in a free society. But I think there would be a lot to be said for making the Dáil, which Simon is a member of, much more a mechanism of accountability, you know, much more a place in which the executive power of the state really is challenged, where ministers really are hauled over the coals before committees, as happens in Westminster. I mean, it's not as if our politicians wouldn't have the appetite to do that, but the system makes them into complete poodles when it comes to holding the executive accountable.
Do you want to digress now and address the issue of the new party you're forming with Jacinda Crichton, or will we save that until the end?
I think save that until it happens.
Right, we'll save it until the end, or maybe not. Anyway, I presume I'm not going to get anything out of you on that subject.
Certainly
it was
not.
It was an impromptu meeting. It was etc. This is what she's been saying anyway. Yeah. All right, we will move on from that. Stephen, obviously you observe politicians close up. I would be of the opinion these are people who work extremely hard. I don't know whether you would share that opinion. And I would also think that they are, though, maligned for the appearance of not doing so.
They do work extremely hard. Almost all of them work extremely hard. And those that don't get re-elected. And some of those who work very hard don't get re-elected because it is a most precarious position job. Very few other people can be slung out at a moment's notice once the electorate makes its decision. And I think that there is a problem, all right, in the sense that the pressure on TDs is to look after constituents. A, the constituents are very accessible. But secondly, if they want to get re-elected, they have to do that. And if they get a reputation for ignoring constituents, then they're in serious trouble. But they do want to have a role as legislators. And I think most of them, I think what Michael and Simon are saying, right, most of them would like to have a much more active role in terms of being legislators. Now, they get very little media coverage for that, even in the committee work they do at present. But I think holding the executive to account and Dáil reform, it might sound a theoretical issue for many people out there, but in fact I think it is part of the problem, and it was one of the problems with our system over the last 10-15 years. So I think Dáil reform is something the two government parties promised. They've been pretty slow about it so far, and I think in the second 2 years of the government they really are going to have to do something quite significant on that to give TDs a proper role and to make sure that the executive is held to account. And then we mightn't have as much, I wouldn't bet on it, we mightn't have as much constant media criticism of politicians if the politicians themselves were holding the executive to account.
And on that subject, Miles, I mean, I was a member of a government which was in office during the period of the Celtic Tiger where things were going wrong. And I mean, the point that I have made up in the McGill School, and I'll make it again here, is that there wasn't anybody who ever challenged me, really, within the Dáil on those subjects. I mean, that's...
So they were asking the wrong questions.
They weren't asking any questions. I mean, for instance, Morgan Kelly, the UCD economist who predicted disaster coming, he was poo-pooed. But I mean, in a sensible democracy...
He was more than poo-pooed.
Yeah, exactly. He was vilified. But in a sensible democracy, he would have been brought in before a Dáil committee, asked to stand up his argument, and then the then Minister for Finance would have been brought in and said, what do you say? He's got points here. We don't have that. We just have no culture of doing that. And the, you know, it may change. But if you hand out the chairmanship,
do you not accept some responsibility for the fact that his thesis was not being questioned, even though you were in government?
Of course, I have to accept responsibility that his thesis wasn't being examined and evaluated. But and sometimes in fantasy moments now, I sort of say, wouldn't it have been great if I had suddenly leapt to the same conclusion as him? I'd be the hero of the hour. Mm. But it didn't happen. Mm. And I wasn't alone. You know, the ESRI and the central bank were cheerleaders for what was happening.
Here's a theory, Simon. Do people resent, because in the abstract, people don't like politicians, just as in the abstract, people don't like journalists. They like individual politicians. They like individual journalists. But do people resent TDs because they, as individuals, feel powerless? They look at public representatives and say, you've got loads of power and you do nothing with it, when the reality is that few TDs actually have any power at all.
I think an awful lot of the anger directed at politicians, and I genuinely believe this, and I've been out and about in my constituency, knocking on doors, meeting people over the last number of days. A lot of the anger with politicians is actually media fueled. And again, I don't make this criticism of Stephen or many of the responsible journalists, but the problem with journalism, and I refer to this, and I studied journalism, but I refer to this in my speech at the Parnell Summer School today, is that journalists are now fulfilling the role on many occasions of the opposition.
Yeah.
Now, that's part of the bizarre, chronic kind of crisis situation we're in at the moment, where, and this isn't a partisan point, but where we somewhat have an incoherent opposition because, you know, Fianna Fáil, who were the almighty, were decimated the last time. You've an awful lot of independents with, and again, no personal remarks about them, but with very disparaging views. And therefore, I think the media have felt the need nearly to fill that void and to actually, in many cases, become constant critics of government, rather than actually talking to the people about the issues and rather than actually reporting. Now, I don't have a problem with criticism.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. But what is a bad thing and what is a bit stupid, and I talk about this as well in my speech later, is when you have this constant kind of cynicism. And again, I refer to this, which is, you know, I did one of my first national media interviews with a broadcast journalist of many years' experience. And I was all ready to talk about NAMA and bondholders. You know, I had the nervous excitement of national politician going to tackle the big issues. You know what he asked me? Could I iron my own shirt? What music did I like? And did I live at home with my mommy? Now, when you have that, and then I go about my duties.
The shirt looks pretty good.
Thank you very much. Then I'd ironed it myself. Then you go about the duties. I go about my duties as a member of the Public Accounts Committee, something that I spend an awful lot of time on, as do all people of all parties who are on it. And, you know, then I have another journalist take to Twitter and say, you know, instead of raising the issue that I'm raising, Simon should go home and play with his Lego. Now, look, I have a very healthy respect for journalists, but this is the point that this is what people are seeing about politics. And all too often, politics and the subject matters being discussed by politics and politicians are actually nearly getting dumbed down rather than having a proper discourse.
I don't think this is particularly unique to Ireland. I remember reading 10, 50, 20 years ago, maybe, some eminent American professor of journalism was saying he thought the media was making a mistake by seeing itself as the opposition. That's the job of the opposition to oppose the government, it's the job of the media to report what's happening. Now, the lines are never that clear, and the media does have a role in being critical. But I think if we had a better system, I think if we do have political reform and the opposition and members of the government parties, I think one of the problems is government backbenchers don't have a role. They can't go into committees. They have ideas and they don't necessarily coincide with their minister's ideas. If they say something that's critical of the government, they're immediately in plunged into a political controversy and being put up as critics of the government. I think the politicians do need to redefine their role. I think you're always going to get an element of the media who are just going to be play on the cynicism and hostility to politicians. We've seen it in the British media far worse. I mean, it's like saying, when you talk about democracy, democracy is a terrible system except everything else, as Winston Churchill saying. I think the Irish media is pretty bad until you start looking at the British media, then you thank our lucky stars that we have a media that broadly reflects the wide concerns of people.
That's not a new concept, and it's not unique to Ireland. A former financial editor, assistant editor of the Financial Times, John Lloyd, wrote a brilliant book about 10 years ago on what the media are doing to our politics, making the exact points that Simon and Stephen are making here, and that is that that the British media were in fact crowning themselves as the opposition, as the real accountability mechanism, and for that purpose denigrating anybody in politics who steps out of line. And you look at politicians here who have stepped out of line. And I'm not going to get into too much controversy, but just take a look, for instance, at Owen Murphy in Dublin South East, who, with a group of other people in Fine Gael, established this kind of a Fine Gael kind of internal talk shop. And all the media were suddenly full of stories that the Taoiseach was carpeting him and telling him that the only place to discuss Fine Gael policy was at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party. Now, in Britain, the 1922 committee wouldn't take that from the Prime Minister. They tell him to get lost. But in Ireland, you toe the line. You don't keep going.
I think it would be said that MPs have slightly more independence in the House of Commons than they do here. And clearly, the Fourth Estate would like to elevate itself to, you know, third, second, or first, perhaps. Are we living? Broad question, Stephen. This would be something, I think, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I think that's something that would be contended by your colleague Fintan O'Toole. Are we living in a failed, dysfunctional state?
Well, I don't think so at all. I wrote a piece actually last Saturday saying we're not a failed state. Look around the world and see what real failed states are like, and not just Somalia or Afghanistan. Even look at Egypt. Look at how difficult it is for democracy to get its foothold. Look at even there are some states in the EU like Bulgaria. They're not a failed state, but having huge difficulty getting to grips with democratic norms. No, we are a democracy. We've been a very secure democracy, one of the oldest continuous democracies in the world. Partly that's an accident of geography because we're situated between the UK and the US, so we weren't going to be invaded by the Nazis or by Joe Stalin, so unless the whole Western world collapsed. So we had a bit of a luxury that people in Latvia and Lithuania or Belgium didn't have. But for all of that, I think we've had a very solid democracy. It has had its faults and it has had its weaknesses. But I think the great success of Irish independence is not alone what was a state established, but that when we had the first, in 1932, when Fianna Fáil, who had fought a civil war, ended up winning the election, power was handed over. There's never been a real question about the democratic will of the people being accepted by the politicians. We have a legal system and a public service. Again, both we can all find fault with both of them, but people trust both systems. They're not corrupt. They're honest. They may be slow and need reform. So I think to call us a failed state is really wildly over the top.
And can I just pick up on the point that Stephen makes in relation to, you know, yes, there is a need for more reforms. We can all talk about reform and until the dogs come home or until the cows come home. But look, I would also hate your listeners to kind of get the impression that TDs are kind of wandering around aimlessly with nothing to do in Leinster House. And I've tried to make this point in my remarks this afternoon as well. It is up to TDs to push the limits as much as they possibly can to get things done. And just to give you one brief example, I'm involved in the establishment of a cross-party group on mental health. We've a representative from each, a backbench representative from each of the political parties and the independent groupings in the Dáil. We've tabled legislation on an anti-discrimination act. Under the new Friday sittings in the Dáil, we'll have an opportunity to actually take that bill. You can, I don't think the Irish people want what they view to be kind of well-paid politicians kind of going around shrugging their shoulders going, well, sure, look, I can't achieve anything. You have to, yes, try and change the system, but you also have to kind of roll up your sleeves and work within the system and push it as much as you actually can. And if people go into the Dáil as they do, and as there's one famous one who was a journalist who went into the Dáil and kind of thinks they're going to change the world overnight, you will be extremely disillusioned. You'll be massively frustrated. But if you take it, you know, little by little, make a difference in people's lives, work the system and change it as much as you possibly can, you can make a difference. You can achieve things. And that's important to know as well.
In relation to the whole notion of the failed state, Michael McDougall, if I could just read to you some quotes from the Democratic Programme, which was one of the foundation documents of the first Dáil. It was an aspirational document. It said, amongst other things, "We declare we desire our country to be ruled in accordance with the principles of liberty, equality and justice for all. In return for willing service, we in the name of the Republic declare the right of every citizen to an adequate share of the produce of the nation's labour. It shall be the first duty of the government of the Republic to make provision for the physical, mental and spiritual well-being of the children." Hasn't worked out all that well, has it?
Well, I mean, those sentiments are to be found, if you like, in the directive principles of social policy in the present constitution, if you want to go and find them. The same sentiments exactly. But I mean, if what you're saying is, and I mean, that Democratic Programme document was effectively agreed by Sinn Féin, as it then was, with the Labour Party, and they bent over backwards to bring Ms O'Brien, who was the leader of the Labour Party, on board, and they put in a fair amount of what would now look like left-wing rhetoric into it. But even taking that into account, I mean, you look at the situation of the poor in Dublin in 1913, 1915, 1916, And you look at the situation of people who are at the lowest end of the economic spectrum now, their lives are radically different. Now, I'm not saying that we should be smug or satisfied about what we can have achieved or what we can yet achieve, but you're talking about a very, very different world. You're talking about a situation of working class child mortality of 40% when that document was written. So, I mean, things have changed. And Gareth Fitzgerald was one of the people, Miles, who very strongly stated, you know, that independence has been good for Ireland. There were a lot of revisionists who sort of wondered, you know, what would have been better staying in the United Kingdom? And if you think of the north-south divide in Britain at the moment, the line from the Severn to the Wash, north of it is in post-industrial decline and is in a state of hopelessness, really. And Belfast and the northern economy is not in a great shape either. It needs huge subsidies to keep going. Yeah. So if you look at what Ireland has actually achieved as an independent state, we have done dramatic things.
Well, there's one thing I was just going to, the UN Human Development Index. It's a measure across a whole range of wealth, of education, health. We are number 7 in the world. Yes. The UK is number 26. Yeah. So as an independent state, we have done pretty well, really.
OK, I would love to spend a lot more time discussing other issues that we haven't got round to discussing, but unfortunately we have run out of time. But you will be rehearsing some of this and a lot more in addition, I'm sure, at the Parnell Summer School this afternoon. My thanks to Simon Harris, Fine Gael TD. I should point out that well-ironed shirt is a very light blue. and Stephen Collins, I downgraded you, by the way, political editor of the Irish Times. My apologies for that. And Michael McDool, who we can now confirm is definitely not involved in a political party, forming a political party.
Own light blue shirt today.
yes, you're wearing a light blue shirt.
It's also blue,
you're not
yeah.
involved in a political initiative with Lucinda
Craig. No, I'm not.
You're not. Okay, right. That we have an emphatic denial there. Thank you very much. We'll take a break.